gets sick, and the acid from the lime cooks the meat. You'll see. All the fish meat will be white. They do this off the coasts in Florida, Mexico, Central and South America. It's great food.
Whatever we catch? Craig asked.
Whatever. Shrimp, lobster, fish, it all goes in here.
Let's do it, little bro.
Antonio scooped the last spoonfuls of fried rice into his mouth and walked towards the parking lot. Craig followed him, talking a mile a minute. Todd went to a grove of trees. He plucked limes and juiced them into the plastic container using the fancy lime juicer he acquired at a cooking store in Raleigh. All right, we have lunch squared away, hopefully. What else do we have to do? Mel and I will take the kids into town to walk around, find items we might need. Tropical clothing is first on our list. Emily gave Melanie and Bernie a head nod.
Okay, the rest of us will hit the real estate office and split up to find a farm or a place to live. Kelly, are you going to tend to the animals?
Hank looked at the vet as she nodded in response.
Well, if no one else has anything to say, let's rock.
Hank finished his food and put his plate in the plastic bag held by Rebecca. Peter walked towards him.
Do you mind if I supervise Tony and Craig? I'm still run down.
The man looked exhausted. The rest of us sat around while you flew the plane. Take all the time you need. Jamie stood behind him.
Peter, I'm going shopping with the gals, but I'll bring you back something nice. Maybe a new hat.
She hugged Peter. Jamie made sure he had a few large bottles of water for himself and the fisherman. She told him to watch the sun and go back to the room if he needed to. Paul got into Dan's SUV. It was still parked right on the beach. Greg and Rebecca jumped into the back seat.
Hold on, Dan advised them.
He pushed the gas down and shot the big truck onto the sand. He turned left and gunned it, tearing down the beach with all of the windows down. Dan and Paul squealed with excitement. There was a small access path at the end of the beach. Dan turned the SUV onto it and soon found a paved road back to town.
Having fun?
Greg asked the men in the front seat.
You need to lighten up, Rebecca told him. You're too serious.
Paul pulled the CD out of his backpack and slid it into the player. He and Dan turned the volume up when the first song played. They sang the entire 15-minute ride into town. The other people arrived at the parked SUVs and had to figure out what to do with the chickens. Kelly suggested putting them in one of the hotel rooms with the door propped open and the cages blocking the entrance. Within minutes, the chickens enjoyed scattered feed off the floor of a Hawaiian resort beachside bungalow. The wild local fowl strutted and clucked on the free side of a wire cage wall. The local real estate office kept detailed paper files on current listing. Folders contained residential descriptions and color photographs. A special green section highlighted homes with alternative energy options. Farm files were in manila folders with tabs denoting crops and animals. The office had a large map of Kauai on the wall. John took the map down to use as a reference. He wanted to triangulate a living zone based on the farming areas and coastal fishing access. Walking and biking would soon be their mode of transportation. They could not live all over the island and had to find a small area that fulfilled all of their needs. Rebecca researched Kauai while in Hanover. She drew a square on the map in an area on the northern shore.
It receives consistent rainfall, and the temperatures are warm but mild, she explained. The forest has wild pigs to hunt. We can fish on the coast, and the farmland is the best on the islands.
Rebecca knew finding empty homes from real estate listings was a short-term solution. They needed to pick one area and clear the bodies out of the neighborhood. Sometimes, even though she knew the outcome, she let other people figure out the solution. Rebecca felt it was important for John to make the settlement decision. She put the square on the map and let him get to a solution on his own. She was reluctant to accept the mantle of tribe leader, though many of the members looked to her for answers and final decisions already.
Dad, Matt said to his father, we have too many people in here. You can handle this, and no offense, but Rebecca seems to have the solution already.
He looked towards the red-headed genius.
The rest of us want to do some exploring, maybe find more lunch, get fishing tackle, towels, whatever.
John looked up from his stack of listings.
Just be back at the hotel for lunch.
Dad, it's not even 7 a.m. How long do you think we could possibly take? It's a tiny island.
We'll be there by 9 a.m. at the latest.
Matt and the other kids chuckled. Everyone was disoriented from the time change and the early morning wake-up.
Oh, yeah. Right. Okay.
He waved them off, returning his attention to the farm listings. John spoke to Hank and Dan.
Let's take a ride up to these farms, see if we can find any equipment that we can use to haul the cows and hogs.
He looked over to Paul, Ahmed, and Rebecca.
You three okay to keep working? We're going to try and get a trailer for the livestock. Get them to a cooler climate today.
I already know where I'm going to live, Rebecca told him, but I'm happy to search for other places if you'd like me to.
She had picked her street while in Hanover, and it was easy for her to find the best home from the few listings in that area. Rebecca did her research, as always, so the actual work was quick and easy.
Solange lifted her head.
Which one is for you and Greg?
Rebecca held up a listing brochure for an estate in Hanalei. She handed it to Solange. Paul checked the address and put a red dot on the map with a marker he found on the table.
Okay, let's see what's near Rebecca's house.
John looked up.
So she picks and we work off of her?
Why not? We need a starting point. She's the most versed on the island. I say we go with it. Paul put down the marker.
Solange flipped through the listing.
It is a perfect estate. Our next step is to visit this house and see what our options are around it. I know it will not be a pleasant job, but we should clear out the occupied homes in the entire area.
So what you're saying is, now that we have a house, we need to go up there and figure out all our other options. We have to find the nearest farms, fresh water, fishing spots, everything.
Dan was on board with going up to Hanalei.
I am all for bookwork when necessary, but it seems like an expedition would be more effective.
Everyone put down the listings.
Rebecca asked a simple question. Why don't we take the farm listings, take the giant map, and see if everyone wants to head up to the new location? It's much cooler up there, and if we want a resort, Princeville is beautiful. We can fish just as easily on those shores.
John picked up his walkie-talkie.
Hey, Matt, we're done here. We're going to the hotel, pick up our stuff, and move to the north.
We're moving already?
Rebecca found our spot? Matt radioed back. Yes, we'll get up there and find a trailer. Come back for the animals today. Let's make our move this morning.
John smiled when Matt referenced Rebecca. As much as he tried to lead, she was the default oracle. John was a fantastic field general, but Rebecca was clearly in charge.
We found a Walmart. We're going to grab some stuff. We'll see you back at the beach, Matt replied.
John switched radio channels and had the identical conversation with Emily. When they arrived back at the beach, Craig and Antonia were sitting next to Peter and Todd. They were talking and laughing as Hubba lay in the sand at the old man's feet.
What's with the laying around? John asked.
It's like fishing with dynamite. We couldn't get them off our lines fast enough. I bet we have 4 pounds of fish in the container, filleted and chunked.
Antonio pointed to the plastic bin.
Seriously, it was like the fish wanted to get caught. They had 6 good-sized fish in less than a half hour. Tony would cast, hook a fish, hand it to Craig to clean, and I would fillet. I couldn't keep up.
Todd explained with amazement how easy it was to catch the fish.
Even Peter was yanking them out like it was a cartoon.
I may have kept my angling skills a secret until now, so I wouldn't have to walk that hill in Hanover every day. My wife and I had a condo in the Marathon, Florida for years, Peter said coyly.
You old dog, Antonio chided him. You sandbagged us and stayed off fishing detail.
Everyone smiled at the old codger.
Well, pack up, Dan announced. We're moving north. Now that we have lunch, our decision is that much easier. All we have to do is cage the chickens again.
He turned to Paul.
I hate catching those chickens.
The plan was relayed to the fishing group, and they prepared for the trip. Instead of caging the chickens, Dan backed his SUV up to the door of the chicken room, and a few of the men went into the room and tossed the chickens directly into the back of the SUV. Dan and Paul volunteered to drive the truck north.
A few cages tied to the headrests separated them from the free-roaming fowl.
"You can listen to your loud dinosaur music with the chickens," Rebecca told them.
The SUV already smelled. "Sunroof open, windows down, we'll be fine," Dan assured Paul. As the tribe pulled away from the beach resort, the temperature was already climbing into the low 80s. Matt's group had the find of the morning, a large moving van acquired from a rental agency near the stores downtown. Emily radioed Kelly with the news of their departure for Hanalei and the discovery of a van.
"I can drive it," she crackled back over the walkie-talkie.
Antonio and the van were dropped off at the airport rental lot. He sat in his Mustang convertible and waved goodbye to the others. Kelly herded the cattle into the back of the truck. She brought the cows during this trip and would make two more with the hogs and the bull. She drove the Kauai coast towards the lush green farmlands on the north shore. Antonio drove his convertible behind the truck. The convertible top was down so he could enjoy the sun and the salt air. 45 minutes after shutting the doors at the airport, the van pulled into rich, fertile farmland at the top of the Hanalei Wildlife Preserve. John gave Kelly a map with a red circle around a farm. She stopped the van in a driveway and saw their goats munching happily on overgrown vegetation. Fences surrounded the property. The goats stood in one section of a large pen area. A stream ran through the farm, and Kelly walked the livestock down the ramp of the truck and into a beautiful grazing field. Wild chickens and roosters ran about. Kelly saw birds flying in and out of the trees to the south.
"Welcome to your new home," she said.
The cows grazed immediately. Some drank from a large water trough filled from a hand pump tapping an underwater spring. The temperature was moderate. Livestock shelters were built up around the fields for relief from the sun. Some of the shelters were in disrepair, but with only a few cows, Kelly knew this farm would work perfectly. She pumped water into a trough in a different paddock, preparing for the arrival of the pigs later that day. There was a farmhouse near the barn. Antonio sat in his car listening to music. Kelly pointed to the house, then to herself, letting him know she was going inside. He nodded and did not turn down his music. Both the screen and storm front doors were unlocked. Kelly took a step inside and into a good-sized first floor. The house was nice, but not extravagant. A living room to the right was bright with sunlight from a bank of windows running the south side of the house. The air was stale and smelled of death. Kelly did not have to look. She knew there were bodies upstairs. She opened all of the windows on the first floor and propped the storm door open for a breeze to flow in and out of the home. Kelly found two fireplaces in the house, one in the kitchen and one in the living room.
"I could live here," she said to herself.
"I hope I don't live alone, but if I do, I can make it work." She opened a back door and walked onto a lanai on the field side of the house overlooking the farm. It had an outdoor shower that worked off a cistern next to the house. She pulled the chain, and cold water rained out of a round showerhead. Done exploring, she made her way back to Antonio.
"Is it going to work?"
he asked her, yelling the question over his music.
"Yeah, once we get rid of the previous family."
"Damn, I knew you were going to say that."
He shook his head in disgust.
"I have a feeling we'll be doing a lot of that over the next week."
Kelly agreed and slid into the passenger seat.
"Let's see what this thing can do."
Antonio grinned and hit the gas. Both of their heads shot back as the car flew down the dirt road. Antonio spun the wheel and turned them around towards the coastal highway. As they passed the farm, Kelly waved to the grazing cows. The van was parked in the road. Antonio avoided an accident, but came closer than Kelly would have liked.
60.
It was noon, and a temperate 82 degrees. Soft, puffy white clouds drifted across the blue sky as a stiff breeze blew from the ocean. Antonio screeched to a halt at a semicircle driveway filled with six SUVs in front of a seaside estate. A realtor's sign stood next to the mailbox. Kelly and Antonio walked through the front door into a gorgeous, fully furnished house.
"This is a nice place," Kelly said to the young man.
Antonio was struck dumb by the opulence. Neither of them had been in a house of this expense or quality. They heard voices and continued through the home towards a beautiful lanai with a saltwater pool and panoramic views.
"You made it," Bernie yelled. "Wash your hands before you eat. There's water. It comes from a natural spring, and solar cells power a pump. How crazy is that? You can wash your hands in a sink with a faucet and not from a rain barrel or bucket of icy snow water. There's even an electric on-demand water heater, so get ready. There's hot water."
Bernie gave Kelly a hug, grabbing Antonio's shirt and pulling him towards them.
"Bernie, calm down. Where can I go wash my hands and eat? I'm starving, and I'm the one who caught the damn fish. Am I the only one who works around here? Tony, start the cars. Tony, catch the fish. Tony this, Tony that."
Bernie gave him a stern look. "You need to watch your language around the children." She pointed towards a half-bath near the pool.
"I'm sorry," Antonio replied.
He walked towards the bathroom, muttering under his breath about all of the work he was doing. When he returned, he went straight for the food. The ceviche was in a large serving bowl with a ladle to spoon out individual portions onto plates stacked on the table. A bag of tortilla chips and boxes of saltine and Melba crackers were open to accompany the meal. Todd added fresh avocado, mango, and cilantro to the fish. A platter of sliced pineapple, star fruit, and bananas was also available. Antonio grabbed two bananas and several slices of star fruit.
"Are we all going to live here?" Kelly asked.
She was not up to speed on the living arrangements.
"Rebecca picked this place for herself," Bernie told her. "We have to find our own slices of paradise." "What is she going to do with all this space?"
Kelly looked around in wonder at the enormous home.
"Location, location, location,"
Rebecca said to Kelly before enjoying a tortilla chip covered in fresh fish. "We're close to a bay for fishing. We're within a mile of the farmland. We're on springs for fresh water. There are a dozen homes on this road. We will stay close without crowding each other." She ate another bite of food. "This is the place for us. This is where we should settle."
"I mean, why not?"
She pointed towards the private beach.
"And you get this great house," Kelly said to her, a knowing smile on her face. "Well, I may have selfish reasons."
Rebecca was not embarrassed about her selection, and the other houses on the road were of similar grandeur.
"Okay," Todd said behind them. "It's lunch on day one. We've accomplished a lot already, but we have work to do. Dan, Hank, and I are going through the houses along this road for removal. We'll do the same down at the farmhouses. We'll be busy for the rest of today and maybe tomorrow."
He took a drink of water. He enjoyed the water from the tap, a pre-rapture luxury taken for granted.
"We need to retrieve the supplies from the plane. We need to figure out a system of distributing food. We need to figure out how to split up the chickens or if we're going to keep the chickens in one location. I know there are only 24 of us, but this is also a society. We should decide how it's going to work."
Kelly ate her food and chimed into the conversation.
"I need to eat. I'm famished. But then I'm making a swing down to the plane. I need to get the hogs and the bull. You can have the truck when I've finished moving our animals."
"I don't want to concern anyone, but we need to think about our next meals. Sure, we have food we can scavenge or that we brought, but I was thinking of throwing down some traps or trying to find something that we can cook."
Greg's traps were in the airplane, but he thought about using his bow to snag a few of the chickens running around.
"You just want to get out of working in the hot sun unloading the plane. I can walk outside and kill a few of the chickens at sundown." Matt eyed his brother with skepticism.
"You plan on catching, cleaning, plucking enough chickens to feed everyone as the sun goes down?"
"If it was just you and me, sure. But we've got Craig, Jacqueline, Jacob."
"Greg's right. He's on food for tonight. Protein, at least. Everyone else should go down to the plane, help with the animals, or help watch the kids."
John had no desire to go to the plane and unload, but it had to get done. Melanie found Kelly.
"Were the farm homes nice? I know my kids will want to live on the ocean, but I'm excited to start a farm.
The one I put the animals next to is very nice. We'll have to clean it out first."
Kelly made a face.
"But it's a beautiful home with a spectacular lanai.
It might be a better home for you and the kids than just me. She described the farm and home in detail. I doubt we'll get our own places, do you? Melanie was feeling the young veterinarian out. I know Rebecca enjoys her space, but I don't want to live on a farm by myself. If the house is as big as you say, I hope you would consider staying there. You don't have to raise my children, but we'd love to include you as part of the family, even more than we already do. If it doesn't work, Kelly told her, I can always move. Kelly did not live alone before the rapture, and the few weeks she hid in her building were not pleasant. She did not hesitate to accept Melanie's offer. I'll make sure the men get those bodies out today or tomorrow. Melanie gave her a wink. Todd, Dan, and Hank assembled for a walk through the neighborhood homes. The afternoon would be spent opening houses and determining which ones were available for immediate occupancy and which ones needed to be cleared. Tomorrow they would find a pickup truck or van to use for cleanup duty. Melanie approached their strategy conversation. The farmhouse needs to be taken care of. I'm not telling you to do it right now. I'm just telling you so you know it has to get done. Noted. Dan nodded. If you need any help, I can't lift as much as you burly men, but I have a strong stomach from working at the hospital. Melanie did not mind dead bodies. She had no love for the smell, but could handle the task. You take care of your kids. We'll get your house cleaned. We're going to wrap the bodies in sheets and take the mattresses out, too. Everything goes into a van or truck, and we'll find a place to bury or burn it all. Todd hoped to be as brave as he sounded when he encountered the bodies. Just thought I'd offer, but you have it under control. The kids and I will be down at the plane loading the supplies. Melanie rubbed Todd's back and walked towards the porch. Let's start on the ocean side of the road, cross the street, and come back the other way. Dan pointed west, and the men walked off the back lanai towards the road. Princeville is that way. Dan pointed toward the town. Let's see how far we get. They each had a backpack filled with snacks and water. They wore yellow latex gloves and white mouth and nose shields. Let's do it. Hank walked between the two men as they approached the front door of the house neighboring Rebecca's. I put the over-under at 3 homes with people. Pretty low. What's your theory? Todd asked as he tried the front door. It was locked. These are expensive homes, probably second or third homes. The rapture hit in July. If you live in Hawaii and there are a few months you decide to go somewhere else, it's the summer. Maybe ski season. But really, if you have to go back to the continental U.S., it's in the summer. If this is your vacation home, you're not coming in July. These places are empty. I stayed at the Princeville Resort for a few days. It was before I was married. Nice place. Dan made a move towards the beach side of the home. Most of the Ocean View houses had open floor plans and large lanais. This house was no exception. The back lanai was open into the living room. There were plantation shutters, but they were not pulled shut. Todd jumped over the knee wall and into the house. I don't smell anything. He gave a thumbs up. I'll walk around to the front door and open it. Meet you up there to move to the next home. They spent 2 hours walking up and down the road, breaking into houses when necessary. They found one set of corpses on the entire street. From the pictures in the home, it was a retired couple, older, living alone. They were decomposing in a large bed in the master bedroom. An open bottle of pills on the nightstand led the men to theorize that one died of the rapture and the second committed suicide. The couple would receive a burial on the central part of the island. The farmhouses were occupied by dead families. It was bad work, but the men used a pickup truck they found near the Princeville Resort to clear out the bodies. Instead of 2 days, they were done in one afternoon. Todd, Hank, and Dan agreed to meet at sunrise to bury the bodies. Let's see how long the walk to the ocean is. If walking is our mode of transportation, it will be good to know how long it takes us to get fish. Todd was tired, but knew he would be making this walk for the rest of his life, and he would often be tired while doing it. It took them 12 minutes to get to the first house on Anini Road. They guessed it would take 20 minutes at a leisurely stroll, but the men were hungry and thirsty and ready to dive into the water. About a mile,
Dan said when they were inside of the house.
Yeah, that's what I'd guess, maybe a little more, but a mile, give or take.
Hank felt better after the walk. The fresh air helped him forget the rancid smells at the farmhouses. The walk stretched his legs and back, both tight from the 12-hour flight the day before. They walked down the road to Rebecca's house. She and Avery were in a discussion. The men waved and went into the water, clothes and all.
It's the way it is, Rebecca. I'm sorry. This isn't a private Greg and Rebecca vacation. We're all in this together. Living in a big house by yourself, well, it's not happening. I know you and Greg love each other.
The comment made Rebecca blush, but she did not drop her gaze from Avery.
And I know you value your privacy, but we're part of a cooperative now. You can have the first floor master. Hole up in there whenever you want, but you have to live with people.
Unless you start your own family, and even then you'll probably want people to help you.
You have to accept all of us are in your life. We are part of your family. You're not an only child.
Avery made it clear to her friend that other people were going to live in her house. Meredith and Avery were definitely moving into the home.
But there are homes right next door. Why do you have to live with us when you can live in the same community but in a different house? That doesn't make sense.
Rebecca did not argue as fiercely as Avery expected.
We need to eat meals together, work together, help each other. I can't be there for you if I'm living 10 homes down the road by myself. That's not a community. No walls like the old days. No locking yourself in your house and shutting out the world.
Avery put her hand on her new friend's arm.
Besides, I'm moving in. You want this house? You'll share it with me and Meredith, and anyone else who wants to live here. You don't want to live with me? Move.
But I'll probably move with you. Rebecca believed Avery, that she would follow Rebecca and Greg from house to house. Rebecca also believed in the fundamentals of Avery's position. This was a community. Moving into 20 different homes was against the fabric of what the tribe was trying to build.
We get the big bedroom on the first floor, and if one of you is a slob, you're out. Or I'm out. I will live with people happily. I will not live with a slob.
Deal. Believe me. You're making the right decision. Avery was used to getting what she wanted. It might take more tenacity now that she was not the beautiful tennis princess, but Avery had plenty of tenacity. Hank came up from the water. He felt refreshed from the awful job he just completed.
How did you two get out of unloading?
I don't know, Rebecca told him.
Honestly, we were just standing here talking, and everyone left. And Ahmed told us to stay here and keep things under control. We were both like, okay.
We didn't want to be total slackers, so we gathered fruits and vegetables from all around the homes. We started a map of the local fruit.
Avery pointed towards a table with a bounty of fruits, peppers, avocados, and a large white paper.
Then we became slackers. We even found some onions, Rebecca added.
Hank walked to the table and looked through the vegetables and at the map. He could not believe how much food was available. Flocks of wild chickens wandered around. Fruit fell off the trees. Fish almost jumped into the nets. Kauai was a godsend for their group. We cleared the homes. The farmhouses might take a few days to air out, and we'll have to move new beds into the bedrooms. But everything is done. Hank sat down at the table, grabbing a banana from the basket.
What are you two talking about?
Community, Rebecca said. Avery convinced me of the idea that we need to stay close, live in a tight community rather than spread out. I'm willing to give it a try.
So you aren't keeping the big house for just you and Greg?
Hank looked at Avery.
You're good. Well done.
I usually get what I want.
Avery put her hands behind her head as she lay back in the chair and closed her eyes.
Well, I'm still impressed. We looked at the houses on either side of this house. Each home has a separate guest house and 4 or 5 bedrooms. We can all live very comfortably in this area. The farmhouses are more spread out, but the people who want to live down in the fields will be happy in 2 of those homes. They're just down the road from each other.
Hello, Greg said, rounding the corner of the house and into the backyard.
He was dirty with green flora stains, dirt, and what appeared to be blood.
I need a little help.
Mighty Hunter bagged himself a pig, or a boar, or something that resembles a pig but with tusks. It was mean.
He held up his hand and showed a cut running across the back. The cut was not deep, but it looked painful.
How big? Hank asked.
He walked towards Greg and made a motion that he would help, holding his arm up above his head and pointing to the front yard.
It's going to feed us, Greg assured him. For a few days, I suspect.
A large hairy beast lay in the back of the truck.
I would guess it weighs at least 40 pounds, maybe 50 on a good day. I had a rough time getting it into the truck by myself.
Holy crap, Greg. Hank was stunned. He did not expect the boar to be so big.
I know. I've gotten pretty good with the bow. It still came at me, so I hacked it down with my machete, right in the head, like it was a zombie or something.
There was pride in Greg's voice.
I cleaned it in the woods, which lowered the weight enough so I could pick it up and put it in the truck.
Hank put his arm around his nephew.
Well, it's not as big as the moose Paul and I killed, but it's a nice-sized animal for you.
You mean the moose that wandered into town and stood still while you and Paul shot it twice?
Yes, Greg, the ton of animal with large antlers that I killed. The animal that fed all of us for weeks and is still feeding us, like the moose fried rice you had this morning.
Hank could one-up the kid all day.
I give, Greg said. Unless I catch a great white shark, I'm never going to outdo you and Paul. You win.
Greg did not care about the good-natured ribbing. The boar was a prized kill. Like the fruit around them and the fish they so easily pulled from the ocean, this boar was proof that they would not just live on the island. The group was going to thrive on the island. The airplane unloading party pulled up an hour later. Tired, sweaty people poured out of their SUVs. Emily was at the head of the pack.
It is 5 degrees cooler up here, maybe 10 degrees cooler.
She found her husband on a lounge chair.
It's done, she told him. Half of us probably have heat stroke, but it's done. All the supplies are in the truck.
She sat down on the foot part of his chair. Todd sat up and crossed his legs in front of himself. The houses are cleared of bodies. Greg killed a wild boar. Avery and Rebecca gathered fruit. I think we can relax, if we can figure out where we're sleeping tonight.
Where do you want to live?
Emily was a mess. Her hair was pulled back into a tight ponytail that stuck through the back of a baseball cap she wore to block the sun. The cap was soaked with sweat. A thin white line of salt ran across the brim at the top of the sweat. A few strands of her hair stuck to her forehead. Her arms were streaked with grease and dirt, as were her legs.
Hawaii? Todd replied.
Kauai?
Emily ignored him. John is going to live here, by the water, for Craig.
Solange and he are going to stay together, obviously. Matt wants to live on the farm. Mel is going to live on the farm with Cameron, Jackie, and Jacob. Kelly is joining them to care for her animals. I'm leaning towards living down in the valley.
Todd looked behind his wife to the ocean.
All of this is new. The way we're going to live will be new, too. I understand your need for stability. I know you want a permanent room for the kids. You want them to grow up with friends their own age. What is Bernie going to do? She has little ones, too.
Todd thought for a second before continuing.
Maybe we live both places. Maybe the village is where we end up some nights. If Craig has a big haul, the farmers will come up here, and instead of walking down the road in the dark, they stay in this location. Maybe when Greg kills another boar, instead of walking it all the way to the ocean, we cook it at the farms, and the ocean people stay down there. Jay and Brian need to know how to fish, hunt, and farm, and be comfortable in both locales.
We can't move them around every day or week.
Emily did not like Todd's answer. Then my answer is I don't know. He took her grimy hand. He flipped it over and saw blisters on her palm and fingers.
Ouch, he said to her.
I might not like the farm. I might not like the sea. The great thing is, I'm telling you we don't have to make a firm decision. We won't have a mortgage. We can move.
I'd like to try the valley first.
Emily took hold of his hand. She squeezed it like a person in love.
Works for me.
The real question is, will it work for Hubba?
Emily leaned in to give Todd a hug. "Are you nuts?" he said, pulling away from her advance. "You're filthy. Go in the ocean or take a shower." Todd let go of her hand. "Yuck." Emily did not back away. She pushed her husband onto the lounge chair, grabbing his hands and pinning him down. She kissed him. Todd feigned a struggle, but kissed her back. "Get a room," Melanie said a few feet away as she toweled off from her swim. "There are impressionable children and jealous widows nearby." The house was equipped with a grill, and like the other high-end furnishing, it was a top-of-the-line wood drawer model. Ahmed flipped pork chops, now sizzling above the flames. "Fried mango rice for breakfast, ceviche for lunch, pork for dinner. I think we've adapted to life in Hawaii quite nicely." Ahmed took a sip from his glass of water. He held the glass up to the group sitting in front of him. "To our first full day." "Hear, hear," was the loud reply. "Our first crop should be rice. If corn is possible, we do corn. But I know we can grow rice here, right? We're practically in Asia," Matt strategized with Melanie. "We need a grain, that's for sure. We can grow sweet potatoes or something easy like that in pots. We'll check the books at the library. It should have local knowledge and information we could not access in Hanover." Melanie listened to Matt while combing Casey's hair. She liked Matt and knew he would be a great partner. She needed to harness his enthusiasm. Farming was a long-term project. Matt wanted crops to grow tomorrow. Similar conversations occurred across the lanai, decisions about where people would sleep that night and live the next day, decisions about what supplies needed to go to the farms and what stayed at the beach, decisions about how often the groups would gather. At 6:30, the sun was still high in the sky, but everyone was exhausted. The early wake-up by the roosters at dawn, working in the heat and sun, and the 5-hour time shift caught up with the tribe. Cameron, Bridget, and Wendy were curled up on couches, taking quick naps before dinner. "We need tables," Bernie said to Kelly and Jamie. "There's one inside." Jamie pointed to the dining room table visible from their seats. "No, we need a couple of long tables, and we need a few sets, one set for here and one set for the farm. We need to eat together at tables." Bernie referred to an ongoing communal eating area, not their immediate dinner plans. "I'll ask Ahmed to find a library or high school to locate long tables and chairs. We need our dinners to be social and in one locale." Kelly described the lanai at the farmhouse. "It will accommodate tables for all of us, and enforce rule number 2. Jamie looked puzzled. "What is rule 2? And what is rule 1 for that matter?" "Rule 2 is never go 2 days without eating together. John and Paul are setting up loose tribe rules, and they want to make sure we stay unified. We never go more than 1 day without gathering for a meal. We always come together every other dinner or lunch. We can eat every meal together if we want, but never 2 days apart." Jamie was tickled. "I could not agree more with rule number 2. What's rule 1? "It's more a way of life than a rule," Bernie told her. "Rule 1 is to always remember that we are in this together. I believe it is being referred to as the thick or thin rule." Jamie understood rule 1. She survived a bleak and hungry winter in New York City because of rule 1. Her eyes filled with tears. She raised her water glass and barely got out an amen. "That's my line," Bernie chuckled, clinking Jamie's glass in agreement. 61. Rebecca woke to the sound of roosters. A week had passed, and she still had no idea how to get rid of the roosters, or keep them from crowing at sunrise. She did not move. She was on her side in a king bed with her eyes open, staring at the wall. Greg lay next to her.
"Just go back to sleep," he mumbled. "They'll stop in a little while."
He pulled a pillow over his head.
"You know I can't fall back asleep once I'm up."
Rebecca sat up in their bed. She wore a UNH t-shirt. She brought several of them to remind her of her home. She put her feet in slippers next to the bed and left the room.
It was cool in the mornings, dropping into the high 60s overnight. Rebecca poured herself a glass of water and walked out onto the lanai. She sat in a chaise lounge chair. The pillow was cool, but not wet from dew. She made sure to keep the chairs under the roof, so they were dry in the morning. The coop she brought from Concord was in the yard, and several roosters strolled around the fence surrounding her mainland chickens. They kept 8 chickens at the house for eggs. She planned to incubate and hatch dozens of chickens. She wanted fresh eggs each morning, without making the long walk to the farm. "Morning," she nodded to the roosters. One crowed at her before strutting away. Greg came outside and sat down in the chair beside her. He wore an orange hooded sweatshirt. The hood was up to keep his head warm. Lapping waves and an ever-present wind created a constant din. The price they paid for living less than 25 yards from the ocean. He put his hand out, and she took it, intertwining their fingers. He leaned back in his chair. Rebecca and Greg sat and watched the roosters walk around the yard. "I believed you when you told me we'd make it, that you'd keep me alive." Greg's head was turned, looking at her. She focused on the chickens. "I know." She squeezed his hand. "I don't know why I did. You were some teeny bopper, skipping back and forth from your house to the trash cans on the street. But for some reason, I believed you." She looked at him. His skin was a dark tan from the week under the tropical sun. "Thank you," he said to her. "Anytime." She smiled. They heard footsteps come down the stairs in the front hall. The roosters claimed other victims. Rebecca and Greg did not move. They held hands and watched the Pacific Ocean break against the sandy Hawaiian shore.
You have been listening to The Last Tribe, produced by Greg Lawrence. Executive producers, James Tan and Greg Lawrence. Text copyright 2015 by Brad Manuel. Production copyright 2016 by Podium Publishing. All rights reserved. If you enjoyed this audiobook, let us know. Take a quick moment to rate and review it on Audible so we know we're bringing you audiobooks you'll love.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.